Good evening and welcome to tonight's Illinois Issues Forum on the State Budget, hosted by Illinois Public Media and NPR Illinois and sponsored by AARP. My name is Brian Moline. I'll be your moderator for tonight's discussion. I'm the host of Morning Edition on WILL AM and FM and the managing editor of the WILL Newsroom. I was honored to be asked to moderate tonight's discussion. Before we get to audience questions and comments, we'll introduce our panel here tonight, and we'll give each of them a chance just to talk a little bit about where we are right now fiscally in the state of Illinois, and also a little bit about how we got to this point. We'll start with the panelist farthest to my left, the director of the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, Chris Moon.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Brian, and thanks a lot, everybody else, for coming today to talk about this really important issue. I just want to make a couple of comments. There'll be a lot of talk, I'm sure, today about a particular pain and specific, lack of bills being paid and people having specific individual hurt. And that's certainly, vitally important to the state. But there's more afoot here than just the individual impacts. And so what I want to do is think a little bit more broadly and talk about the three C's here that are being damaged and are being hurt by all this craziness. First one is credit. Okay, the state and local governments always need to borrow money for various capital improvements. That's just like you borrow money to pay for a house and then pay it off as you use it. We do the same thing with roads and bridges and public buildings. Right now, our credit rating is just a couple of notches above junk status for the state, and many of the universities are, I think, what, five are in junk status right now, the universities individually, but the state itself. And there are signals that this could go lower if they don't come up with a budget in the near future, certainly by the beginning of the fiscal year. And if that happens, when we move down to junk status, all of a sudden many institutional investors can no longer invest in our bonds. That shrinks the buying pool, that raises the price, and so it's a long-term amount of money. We already have the lowest credit rating of any state in the country by several notches. And that means our borrowing costs are higher. Plus, research by Marty Luby at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs recently demonstrated that not only do we pay the extra price in interest that lower rates or lower ratings cost, we actually pay more than some other generic state would be with the same rating. He calls it the Illinois penalty. And this is, like human beings, just like people, right? When you get more debt, you get a double whammy. You got to pay that big debt off, plus you got to pay more to do so. And this is an impact that's going to last for years. The second C that we're having a problem with is confidence. It is less concrete than the credit problem, but the state is facing a crisis of confidence from a variety of people that are involved in and around the state. Now, the credit problem actually is it is based on confidence. It's Wall Street's confidence. They don't think we can pay the money back, so they're going to charge us more for the privilege of borrowing it. But people in the state and out of the state are losing confidence in our leaders' abilities to solve the problems that we're faced with right now. So, voters are becoming disenchanted if polling is any indication. They dislike everybody equally. Business leaders are worrying about the future. They're thinking about investments, whether it be expansions or moving in or out of the state. College students are leaving the state. Instead of going to Eastern, they're going to Indiana State. Instead of going to Southern, they're going to Murray State. And we're seeing more and more evidence of that. People are moving away from the state in higher numbers than our neighbors. And public officials are leaving office because of this disenchantment. So, can our leaders fix this mess? I think that's an open question. I will say that they will fix this mess, and they can fix this mess. It's just a question of how long it's going to take them to do it, because it's what we're seeing now can't go on forever. don't ask me when. Could be tomorrow, could be 2 years from now, I don't know. But it's going to happen. But the question is it soon enough that will not damage the confidence that people have and that we need in the state in order to progress? And the third third C in my list is comedy. The lack of comedy, and that's with a T, not a D, but I think both are in short supply these days. The political system and the policymaking process in Illinois is as rancorous as I've ever seen it before. And, you know, Governor Eggert's been around a lot longer than I have, so he may find it happening. There may be a similar period that I don't know what it is. And, you know, it starts with frustration by, and I'm talking about among the policymakers right now, not among necessarily among the citizens, people that have to solve these problems. They have to get together under the dome and work these things out. It starts with a frustration by the policymakers that they can't get something done, and it's fueled by unprecedented and vast amounts of campaign money. You know, we bemoan this about D.C. all the time, but it's very much reflecting and increasing in Springfield. You know, you cross the line, you cross the party line, and it's an offense punishable by death, or at least $1 million funded primary opponent. And, you know, so you've got lack of trust among the governor and the legislative leaders, that's evident. And as the problems grow in length and in size, tempers flare, frustration and distrust grows, pressure builds. It is a miserable place in the state capital these days. And no one under the dome is happy, especially the leadership. Even the affable John Cullerton is rarely cracking a joke these days, or at least not that I've seen. So that's my 2 cents worth.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris. Our next panelist, the 38th governor of the state of Illinois, first elected in 1990, reelected in 1994. Jim Edgar, governor, if you could just briefly give us your thoughts on the state of things right now in Illinois.
Well, to me, the most important issue every year in state government is the budget. As the governor for the 8 years, that was my number one priority. Now, there's other things I wanted, but nothing was as important as getting a good budget. And that's what I think we need to dwell on here in Illinois. We need to get a good budget. There's a lot of other issues. Some of them are good issues. Some of them, I think, are a little phony. But none of them compare to having a good budget. And we haven't had one now for 2 years. And I've been around Springfield for 50 years. The state is in the worst mess it's ever been in. Even during the Begorovich years, it wasn't as bad as it is now. Part of it is what Chris has mentioned, the rancor, the non-civility that exists today. That's true of all of politics, unfortunately, but it's come big time in Springfield. Now, when I was governor, Speaker Madigan's been speaker forever. I think he went back to Lincoln's time. But we used to fight, but it never was personal. I mean, I used to have him down for lunch every day when we were in an impasse, trying to figure out how do we get each other off the limb. But unfortunately, that's not true today. It's become much more personal. Again, Chris mentioned the amount of money being spent, attacking people on their personal character. It's really hard to call someone a crook and then expect them the next day to sit down and compromise with you. That's just, I don't think, a good strategy. So unfortunately, as Chris has mentioned, the atmosphere today is much different than what I went through 25 years ago when we had a budget crisis. I mean, we thought it was the biggest budget crisis the state ever faced in 1991. It looks like child play compared to what they're facing today. So we need to focus on the budget. The budget is the most important issue. People talk about the economics. Again, the budget is crucial to the economics of this state. We have seen damage done in the last 2 years that has cost jobs and I think has cost much of our economic future. Those thousands of young people who are leaving Illinois to go to higher education in another state probably aren't coming back. And to me, that's the number one economic criteria to a strong future, is the workforce, and particularly our young people. So that damage alone, to me, from an economic point of view, is a reason why we need to stop all this fighting and rhetoric and let's deal with the budget. It's not going to be easy. You know, we're still arguing over whether we're going to talk about a budget. Once we get there, that'll be tough negotiations too. Just if the governor and the leaders agree to really sit down and talk about a budget, I don't think it's going to be that easy to resolve if we ever get there. We're going to have to raise taxes, which is very unpopular. We're going to have to cut spending, which is very unpopular. I had to do both, and I know how people don't like that. And third, and this is maybe going to be the toughest thing to solve this, it's not going to be done overnight. It's not going to be done in one fiscal year. We're going to have to stay on a fiscal diet in Illinois for several years to undo the damage. Some of this damage done before 2 years ago, but particularly the extraordinary amount of damage that's been done the last 2 years. Won't be easy. But everybody, I think, needs to understand that we need to get on this. Every day that we wait, this problem grows, multiplies huge amounts. So if we solve this tomorrow, don't expect in a week everything's going to be back to normal in Illinois. It's going to take a long time. And I think everyone here who said maybe you're not affected, yes, you are affected. You just may not know it. But everyone in this state has been affected, and not in a positive way. So I just hope that sanity can return to Springfield. You don't have to like each other. I'm not sure Speaker Madigan liked me. I'm not sure I liked him. But, you know, at the end of the day, we could sit down and work something out. And we need to get back to those times where you remember you're there to solve problems. You're not there just to get reelected. Now, I have to tell you, as a former politician, we all want to get reelected. But the purpose of getting elected is not just to run for reelection. It's to do something. And the time is to do something in Springfield.
Thank you, Governor. Our third panelist tonight is the president of the University of Illinois, Timothy Colleen. President Colleen, just your thoughts on where we are right now.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks to you and to WILL for hosting this forum. It's a really important time for the state, and the budget impasse is taking a major toll on public higher education that we all need to be concerned about. I've been in the state for 2 years, and I think I must have done something wrong when I showed up but it is unconscionable that it's continuing to go on, because real damage is being done. The historical roots of this situation in Illinois are deep, though. It's not just like problems have emerged in the last couple of years with the most recent gubernatorial election. There are deep problems to resolve in terms of unfunded pensions, et cetera, and we have to take advantage of our assets in this state in very important ways to work our way out of the hole in which the state finds itself. The role of institutions like ours has never been more important. We have to exercise honor, integrity, and thought to be able to move forward. And that means institutions like University of Illinois have to be leaner, more efficient. They have to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. We have to thread the needle in terms of the bipartisan relationships. It's very important to recognize that there is good faith, despite the lack of comedy. All individuals want good things to happen for the state, and they may be working in different parts of a spectrum, and we need to mine the individual components. And we want to try to do that at U of I, but we are certainly in a slow erosion of quality and excellence that's not worthy of this state, not worthy of the families, not worthy of the 81,000 students that we have under our wings, and the 20,000 graduates that come forward, and their job prospects, et cetera. So we have to do something about this. Like our peers, we've been very strategic and thoughtful in trimming where we can. We've got our own bill, our own budget that we've written in a bipartisan way over the last year that we think is a very thoughtful, strategic, forward-leaning option to look at public higher education in its fullness in terms of performance and accountability as well as outcomes. So we need to do that, but there's no getting away from the damage. We're $650 million out from where we would normally be. The state is losing on a net basis 16,000 high schoolers every year. We only retain one in three of the applicants to the University of Illinois. And when we ask them why they're not coming, This is a big issue, the confidence issue that was raised there. Also the financial issue. There are great concerns about pension deficits and about the cost of public higher education. So there's a lot to do, but I'm an inherent optimist, and I think the assets of this state are truly extraordinary. We have wonderful institutions. We have smart people. We've got a willingness to work hard. The Midwest work ethic is still there. It's important that we recognize that we are in a hole. The first law of holes is to stop digging when you're in a hole. We need to do that now. The second law of holes is to climb out. It's going to take years to climb out, as has been noted already. It's going to take a determined, long-term, visionary strategy of how to build public equity, social equity, human capital in this state, and it's going to need all of the aspects of public-private partnering, innovation agendas, as well as retention of talent in this state to do that. I believe, and I'm incredibly proud of what the U of I has been able to do. We have weathered the worst of the crisis. You've not seen massive layoffs. You've not seen furloughs. You've not seen us crying wolves at the door, although I joke sometimes the wolf is just over that privet hedge, and now the fangs are showing as well. So we can't have another year of this. It is unconscionable, as I pointed out. When I was in Springfield the last couple of days, I know people are frustrated. They're working hard, long hours, towards a resolution. We do need that degree of aspirational thinking and integrity that will allow us to get to a place where compromises can be sought and made. But in the meantime, I can assure you that the U of I, celebrating its 150th anniversary this year, is going to be here for another 150 years. We are going to do everything we can to preserve our core mission, which is the world-class experience of our students. That's what we care most about. We are down 400 FTEs that are jobs missing from over the last year or so, but they're administrative jobs. They're not jobs that directly interface with our students. And we've got our plans to make further investments in the kinds of facilities and faculty that will really build the human capital that the state is going to need present in this state, working in this state, paying taxes in this state, with a funding pathway that allows us to get out of these long-term problems. I think the leadership is there. I think we need a little bit of magic pixie dust, perhaps. But the role of the U of I, I think, is incredibly important as an institution that is part of the solution and not part of the problem. I have to say that some of our other public institutions in the state are really suffering, very close to catastrophic decisions. And that's not worthy for their students and their families, too. And once you're on these slippery slopes, it's hard to turn around and stop and return to where we are. So we're going to do everything we can to advocate. We're going from urging to demanding. I hope maybe that's the theme for this evening. It's time to demand rather than just simply urge. And any time a politician tells me, well, I think it's so difficult there may not be a budget, my response is, that is not for you to say. We need a budget. It's your job, your role, and let's work together. Let's find the path. Let's create the ideation. Let's create the templates to move forward. And I think with the good faith that is there, it really is there, I'm optimistic that maybe we'll see a breakthrough pretty soon. So thanks for your time and for inviting me to this.
Thank you, President Killeen. Our fourth panelist tonight is from the sponsor of tonight's event, AARP. Thank you very much for sponsoring tonight's discussion. The president of Illinois AARP, Rosanna Marquez. Ms. Marquez, your thoughts on our current situation.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone. My thanks to NPR Illinois for giving us the opportunity to, through this past due forum, to share our concerns and, more importantly, give a forum to hear all of your concerns. We're all trying to keep our remarks fairly brief because we're all really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. AARP has 1.7 million members in Illinois who are very deeply concerned, very frustrated, and yes, even quite angry about the failure of our elected officials to do their very basic job for which they were elected, which is to pass a budget. And so AARP, for its part, has launched our Enough is Enough campaign to give voice to those concerns and to your voices and to help lead the state back into long-term fiscal health, but starting first and foremost by getting a sound budget passed in this state. I am eager to hear directly from all of you, but want to lay out a little bit of groundwork by setting aside what I think are a couple of misconceptions about the crisis we find ourselves in. First is the idea that this two-year budget stalemate is some abstract political Springfield problem with no lasting impact or harm being visited on all of this. This is not the case. You've heard allusion to some big numbers. I'm going to throw a few big numbers at you. Illinois is over $14 billion in the hole in unpaid bills, a number that is growing by a full $500 million each and every month that we don't have a budget. Over $32 billion is owed to the state's bondholders. And there's an unfunded pension liability in this state of over $130 billion. These are all big, real numbers that we should all be concerned about. Without a balanced budget and a plan for addressing these long fermenting problems, this state will be forced to raise each and every one of our taxes throughout the state to cover all of that debt. And it's not just taxes at the state level, but it will be taxes at the local level as more and more obligations are pushed down to our municipalities. You know, already Illinois has now the single highest property taxes in the country. The budget issue has led to dramatic and real economic consequences as thousands of Illinoisans have lost jobs. We've lost over 10,000 manufacturing jobs in Illinois just in the past year. And we've lost 50 major businesses to Indiana and 65 to Wisconsin recently, both all trends that will continue if we don't fix, for starters, are the lack of a coherent budget. Seniors and their families are already facing severe consequences as funding for the kinds of programs that allow seniors to get home-based care erodes. And so we're beginning to see, you know, parents and grandparents who are forced prematurely into nursing homes, robbed of their ability to stay and grow older in their communities. I am glad to be back here at my alma mater. This is my undergraduate alma mater. I have had the chance to walk around here these last couple days that I've been here, and it is in pretty good shape, but the state of public education in the state is quite dire, and I will only add to the comments that you've already heard that Illinois is only second now to New Jersey in the country in terms of exporting students, as students and their parents look for more stable quality education prospects elsewhere. I could go on, but I hope you get the picture generally of how this affects all of us. The second misconception that I want to attack here this evening is that politicians don't care about our concern and that there is nothing that we can do about it. This is wrong on both counts. Elected officials do care, even if it is only about getting reelected or gaining some sort of political advantage. Our challenge is to make them care about the issues that we as their constituents care about and to understand that it is to their greatest political advantage or disadvantage to pass a budget or not. Which gets me to the second part of this misconception, that there is nothing that we can do about this while this all plays out in Springfield. There is something that we can do. They do listen. We just have to act. At the NPR Past Due Forum a couple of weeks ago in Springfield, we heard from my fellow AARP Executive Council member, Howard Peters, who's had a long, distinguished career in state government, including as a Deputy Chief of Staff in the Governor's Office. He said there, and I can confirm as someone who worked for a number of years in senior positions in the mayor's office in Chicago, that every letter gets read. Indeed, every letter is assigned to someone who has to read and respond directly to that letter. We also have another Executive Council member at AARP, Beth Colson, who's a former state legislator, who's told us that she's checked with her former colleagues, and they tell her that for whatever they're reading in the papers, they're still not hearing so much from their constituents about their concerns and frustration over the lack of a budget, and therefore that they don't feel as much of an urgency to act. We're working to change that through our Enough is Enough campaign and forums like this. If they don't hear from us, we are giving them permission to continue to do nothing, in which case we get the government that we deserve, and we deserve better than that. So I look forward to hearing from all of you this evening.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Marquez. Thank you to all four of our panelists. You see the two microphones in our aisles here. If anyone has any questions for the panel, any comments they'd like to share, if you just feel free to line up beside the microphones, and we will call on you to ask your questions, make your comments here tonight. The one thing I would say, obviously this, as our panelists mentioned, this is an issue that does affect everybody, often in very dramatic ways. One of the things that NPR prides itself in is a respectful discussion of even the most controversial topics. So there will be strong emotions tonight, I have no doubt about that, but we ask that we keep the conversation as respectful and civil as possible here this evening. All right. With that, go ahead with your question or comment.
Hello, my name is Dina Lawrence, and I work at the university. I'm also an alumni of the university and a lifelong citizen of Illinois. And I feel like Illinois is my home, and my house is on fire. And the firemen are standing in the street arguing over which hoses will best put out the fire. At this point, it's so far gone, we need to throw everything we've got at this problem. And I respectfully have to disagree with you, Ms. Marquez, because I personally have participated in every outreach to our legislators. I just last week took a vacation day and went over to the Alumni Day at the Capitol. Our legislators ducked these scheduled meetings. One of them went home for the day an hour before their meeting. The one we did get to talk to said, oh, you know, you just don't understand. It's difficult. Everybody wants our money, and everybody, you know, we can't please everybody. And I would just love to have written a letter with my Illinois taxes that said, well, you just don't understand. Everybody wants part of my paycheck. I got to pay the mortgage. I got to pay the utilities. I'll let you know when I have a budget. I'll send you what I owe you, because that's what they're doing to us. The money is being collected, and they're not dispersing it. And to me, and I'm not a lawyer, I wish I were right now, I don't understand how this is not, in some form or fashion, illegal. Where is our money? You know, we have to pay out for our benefits, and we have to wait. Delta Dental is behind, like, they're processing from 2015. You know, it's crazy. I mean, and all the disadvantages that you all wisely pointed out, it also feels to me like it has become so rancorous. Good people don't want to go into politics anymore. And I had the pleasure a year ago of hearing Governor Edgar speak, and I was the first person to ask a question that day, too, and I asked you, what would it take for you to run again? And he said his wife wouldn't let him.
Yeah, I always blame her. The dental thing, I had the same experience. I have a dental bill from 2015. I got it paid about 2 weeks ago, which I always tell people that. I always hear people complain about public employees and especially the pension. I said, hey, they paid their part. Yeah. They did their part. You know, get off their backs. They, you know, the other thing, one of the procedural problems here, there is money in the treasury, but there's no appropriation bill passed to dispense it because they don't have a budget. I mean, this is ludicrous to me, because you do have billions sitting over there. Now, they don't have enough to pay all their bills because they're spending more than they're taking in, particularly when they let the income tax increase expire, but the spending stayed at that level. Today, people say, well, I've had people tell me, well, it's great we don't have a budget. I said, we're spending more money than we're taking in now because we don't have a budget. So, I mean, as the president says, we haven't stopped digging the hole. And but again, I do get tired of hearing people rank against the public employees because they have done their share.
Isn't there some way that the citizens of the state would have some legal recourse beyond our vote? Because frankly, by the time the gubernatorial, and Madigan's up for election again, I mean, first of all, there's no guarantee we wouldn't end up with the same mix of people. Mm-hmm. But second of all, that's a really long time to wait for no budget. Another year is just not doable. And I can't help but feel there must be some other recourse. I remember when President Reagan forced the air traffic controllers and the union into binding arbitration because the impact was so severe to the nation of that strike. Why can't we do something like that? Why can't they be required to sit down and do it?
Probably you don't have the law. I mean, fortunately, Reagan had the law. He could do that and do it. But I'll get out of this. But people, elected officials, do respond to their constituents. Now, they might try to dodge them, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, they know, they're going to have the last say. And I think it is extremely important that people speak up. And some of you have done that, but the vast majority have not. And as far as what will trigger this, there's two things that I never thought would happen. I mean, one thing particularly that I thought we'd never get to this point, I never believed you could pay state workers without a budget. And the court, that judge down in St. Clair County, that was screwed that up, I'd be truthful. I mean, because when I was governor, we always said, I can't go without, we can't pay people if we don't have a bill. If we don't have people working, then things can. The other is when the school aid formula bill was signed in, because that paid the schools, the elementary, secondary. And so schools opened. And that took the pressure off that I guess we never thought would happen without a budget. And now the court still, Supreme Court has not, for some reason, really dealt with this paying employees without a budget. And I don't know if they ever will take that up, but those are a couple of points that at least some in Springfield thought if that ever happened, that might force this thing. But so far, I never dreamed we'd go two and a half years without a budget. I mean, I still can't believe it. Yeah.
Thanks for coming to the alumni. Keep coming. It makes a difference. Keep going. And let's also avoid this blame the victim syndrome, which is also present in the media.
Let me just point out that you raise a really good point about why, where's all this money going? We're giving them their taxes, and it's important to know that, even though we don't have a budget, because of the K-12 portion being signed, because of various court orders like the ability to pay state employees without an appropriation, which, since 1215 on the fields of Runnymede, when the barons of England grabbed King John by the scruff of the neck and forced him to sign the Magna Carta, that is through the legislative process that money gets authorized to be spent. And now it's changed dramatically. But so there's all this money that's being spent on autopilot, and it's based on FY 2015 spending levels. And the FY 15 is in the middle of that fiscal year. The tax went down. The temporary tax increase went down, and so we have autopilot for high levels of spending for about 90% of what government does, but we have revenue for something like $5 billion or $9 billion a year less than that. And so the things that are outside of those court orders and consent decrees and continuing appropriations, including primarily it's universities and certain human services, they're the ones that are getting the shaft right now. So the University of Illinois and the other universities are disproportionately bearing the brunt of this. But it's harder to worry about them than it is to worry about battered women's shelters that are closing down, or daycare centers. People can't get to work because their subsidized daycare is taken away, or they can't get drug treatment and that sort of thing. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for your question. Next, go ahead, sir.
My name is Mike Melvin, and I'm a retired electrician from the U of I here, and I'm very concerned about the budget. I've spoke to both my state representative and state senator for about the last 2 years, at least a monthly basis. And it just aggravates me to talk to them because they don't seem like they care at all. And they kind of don't answer the questions that I ask them. In 1996, the pension liability was about $20 billion. And 17 years later, in 2013, it was about $111 billion. And during that same time period, the first pension reform was given a 50-year period. I don't know why they chose 50 years to have a funded pension liability. And then I figured it out, had it grown the same rate for the next 33 years, it would have been $2.5 trillion, which is quite a bit of money. And it seems like we have a huge exodus of people in Illinois now, and there's 102 counties. Of those, 89 lost population last year. Cook County lost 22,000 people. And I just can't see things getting better until we get a budget. And I think the pension, I can't understand why it wouldn't go to a defined contribution as opposed to a defined benefit, because I think it's too hard to manage that.
All right. Governor Edgar, maybe you can speak to pension reform during your time in office. I know that was a difficult issue that you tried to address while you were in office, and where things went from there.
Two things on that. First of all, the legislature a few years ago did, for all new employees, you basically go that route. I mean, they have the Constitution, contrary, and this was the mistake, what, about 3 or 4 years ago when they passed the so-called pension fix. It was clearly unconstitutional. I mean, why they wasted their time. And it was bipartisan. I mean, it was the Republicans and the Democrats, the Chicago Tribune, everybody was in on it. And it was clearly unconstitutional. So we delayed for 4 years really dealing with it. Now we have the budget impasse and nothing's happening on it either. Let me go back. When I was governor, when we were finally beginning to come out of the recession in 94, we looked at trying to, for the first time, address the pension thing. Because the pension underfunding had been historical for 40, 50 years. And we did put into play a plan. It did take many years, but it was the first time the state had made a commitment to pay X number of dollars into the pension plan. And the law was you paid it first. The legislature couldn't, you know, to pay what's left over, what they used to do, which never was anything left over. And by the end of my term in 99, the pension fund had gone up. It was the highest funded it had ever been. Unfortunately, a few years later, they did an early retirement, which gave people 10 years early start on retirement. That may have had an impact. Then, and there was a ramp on the payment, because the theory was, we're just coming out of recession, we can't pay as much. 10 years from now, with inflation, you can pay more. And they all knew it. And we had a tobacco bailout and a lot of things. They didn't put any of that aside. People always ask me, as governor, what do you regret the most? And for the most part, I don't regret much. I think things worked pretty well at the end. Things were going. But I left $1.5 billion surplus. I regret that. I should have put that into the pension fund. I should have put that in Al Gore's lockbox or something. Because within 6 months after I left, they'd spent it. And I don't know where it went. And unfortunately, we didn't have the discipline to stick with that payment plan. And then they stopped making that payment. They took out the provision you had to pay it. And the problem has just got worse. So again, I go back to something I said. It's not going to happen overnight. And I don't think we need 100% funded pensions. Actuaries and I will argue. But if you notice, most states the Springfield paper had a survey today, and I think most states are funded around 65 to 70-80% of their pension funds. And there's one that was 90, I think Wisconsin was 92, but the rest of them, and we would have been on that path, and I think we'd have been there quicker than 50 years, but unfortunately we got away from that. But again, everybody's got to understand, whatever the solution to paying off our
$14 billion debt that's growing every day, or to deal with the pension plan, it's going to take a long-term solution, and we're going to have to stay on it. And as I've always said, the hardest thing to get politicians to do is not to raise taxes or cut spending. That's really hard. It's to stay on a fiscal diet for several years. But everybody in the state's got to understand that, too. So you can't go and ask for a lot, because we're not going to have a lot. Just hope we can pay for what we already have. And that's going to take time.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike, for your question. Yes, go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Doug Levy. I'm a 2014 graduate of the University of Illinois. My family lives in Champaign. I'm currently a dual degree student. I just finished my first year at Harvard, getting my Master of Public Policy and also going to law school. So when all four of you spoke to the need for competence, to use your phrase, and getting young people to come back and work here, continuing the long-term nature of this problem, Governor, as you spoke to, nobody in my school from Illinois really is encouraged or interested in coming back given the current issues. So I was hoping that you could dive into that topic a little bit more. Why should I, as somebody who hopefully is going to have options as to where I end up after school, why should I come back to the state and start paying all these taxes when there might be a better offer somewhere else?
Illinois is one of the greatest states in the union. No, we have more resources. We have more things going for us. We just have a breakdown in Springfield right now. And that's caused a mess. But this is a great state. And we need you folks back to make sure it realizes its potential. Chris is, he's a little more optimistic than I am. He thinks this is going to be resolved sometime. I get more and more pessimistic. I never dreamed we'd be in this mess. But this is a great state. This is not Puerto Rico. And this is not Michigan. We're not Detroit. Chicago's not Detroit, and Illinois is not Puerto Rico. Sometimes you wouldn't know that reading the papers, but we have a lot of things going for us, and we need to get back on track, and we need you folks to do that. And again, taxes, talk about taxes, we do have a high property tax. We have one of the lowest income tax in the nation. So it's because we're too high taxes our problem. It's because we haven't met our fiscal needs and been able to do what we need to do. But again, I would say there's not a, you know, I've been around this country a lot, and Illinois has a lot going for it. And one of the things we always had going for it are our universities. In fact, when I was governor, I'd have business leaders say, we don't like your workers' comp, we don't like this and that, but we like stability, and you have stability. We had stability in the 90s. But they said, you also have some of the greatest universities in the world. And that's extremely important to us. And that's what I'm afraid we're going to lose here. We've already put it at a great risk. But again, I would just say to young people, this state still has a great future, and you need to be part of it.
Let me pile on in 30 seconds, if I may, because he's absolutely right. This state has more amenities, opportunities, fresh water, diversified economies, incredible institutions, and it's affordable. You don't have to pay $40,000 a year to park your car like you do in Silicon Valley today. This is a place you can raise your family, and you've got access. This is an amazing state. If it just uses its assets effectively, it will be the mecca. And we're also, incidentally, the capital of the Midwest, which is a third of the GDP of the United States. Just think about that for a minute. We can lead.
Thank you very much.